The next case this morning is 520-0367, People v. Lewis Reed. Arguing for the defendant appellant is Christopher Seeloff. Arguing for the state is Diane Campbell. Each side will have 10 minutes for their argument. The appellant will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please note only the clerk is permitted to record these proceedings.
Good morning.
Morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Seeloff,
are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, please do so.
Your Honors, counsel, may it please the court. My name is Chris Seeloff, and I represent the defendant appellant, Mr. Lewis Reed. This case is about whether the circuit court conducted any sort of preliminary inquiry into Mr. Reed's post-plea claims of ineffective assistance, and if not, whether the appointment of new counsel cured this error by the circuit court. As the briefing in this argument will show, the answer to both questions is no, and this court should remand Mr. Reed's case to the circuit court for a preliminary Krankel inquiry. As an initial note, Mr. Reed conceded that this court does not have jurisdiction to hear the first two issues in his brief due to an untimely notice of appeal. However, the Krankel issue has been preserved with a timely notice of appeal, and the state does not contest that this court has jurisdiction to determine whether the circuit court erred in failing to conduct a preliminary Krankel inquiry. Your Honors, the main point for this court to focus on, and the ultimate question, is whether a preliminary Krankel inquiry took place. If the answer is yes, then we can move on to determining whether the inquiry was adequate and Mr. Reed's ineffective assistance claims were meritorious. If the answer is no, then the analysis ends because the failure to inquire requires remand for a preliminary Krankel inquiry.
Mr. Seeloff, are you aware of any cases that say simply appointing new counsel satisfies a preliminary Krankel inquiry?
In fact, Your Honor, I'm aware of a couple of cases that say the appointment of new counsel does not satisfy the requirement for the circuit court to conduct a preliminary inquiry, the most notable of which, cited in all of the briefing in this case, is People versus Reed from the First District. And it's important that we discuss Reed because it's a near one-to-one analog in this case. In that case, the court held that the appointment of new counsel after previous counsel withdraws does not abrogate the need for an initial Krankel inquiry by the circuit court. Quoting from the First District, quote, even after new counsel appeared, there's no indication in the record that any inquiry into defendant's ineffective assistance of counsel allegations occurred, unquote. In fact, counsel in Reed arguably did more than counsel in this case, at least with regards to representing the defendant's pro se allegations of ineffective assistance of counsel, where that new attorney argued at least a, quote, catch-all allegation that the defendant was denied the effective assistance of counsel during trial, unquote. So according to Reed, and the logic that should be followed by this court, when new counsel is appointed to represent a defendant who has raised a Krankel claim, new counsel either has to raise those pro se claims as if they were their own, state why those claims don't have merit if new counsel intends to argue other claims as similar to what happened in this case, or withdraw as counsel entirely if there are no meritorious claims at all post-trial. And in fact, this court in both People versus Ferguson and People versus Frakes stated that it followed both Moore and People versus Moore from the Supreme Court, as well as People versus Reed's holding, that the appointment of new counsel does not cure the circuit court's failure to preliminarily inquire under Krankel. And there's no reason for this court to abandon that logic in this case. In both Ferguson and Frakes, this court stated that the circuit court's failure to inquire under Krankel requires remand, quote, so defendant has the opportunity to specify and support his claims against counsel, unquote. And that, quote, allowing trial counsel to withdraw and appointing new post-trial defense counsel does not satisfy the Krankel procedure, unquote.
Seeloff, refresh my memory. Those were two unpublished Fifth District cases. Are they after the deadline when they can be cited?
Yes, Your Honor. They are from 2021, and so they can be. They are not, obviously, binding authority. However, they are persuasive authority for this court.
All right. Thank you.
Of course, Your Honor. To that end, the purpose of a preliminary Krankel inquiry in the circuit court is to facilitate the trial court's full consideration of a defendant's pro se claim and thereby potentially limit issues on appeal. And that is from People versus Ayers from our Supreme Court. A proper preliminary Krankel inquiry will create the record necessary to adjudicate the defendant's ineffective assistance claims on appeal. And a failure to conduct a proper preliminary inquiry precludes appellate review of the defendant's pro se ineffective assistance claims, specifically because there would be no record upon which to argue them. And so, without a proper inquiry, the necessary relief is a remand of the circuit court. In this case, there is no indication that any preliminary inquiry took place. There is simply nothing in the record to suggest, to support a claim that the circuit court inquired in any way into Mr. Reed's claims of ineffective assistance. The state's argument that the circuit court relied on its memory of counsel's performance at trial is unsupported by the record. There's nothing in the record to suggest that the circuit court ever considered counsel's performance. A search of the record does not reveal any discussion by the court of counsel's performance, or even for that matter, the word Krankel or the phrase ineffective assistance of counsel. Furthermore, in its response brief, the state does not cite to anywhere in the record that Mr. Reed or this court could turn to for evidence that the circuit court ever considered Mr. Reed's Krankel claims. Its argument that the circuit court relied on its memory of trial counsel's performance is based on innuendo and speculation and does not provide any reason to suggest that Mr. Reed was afforded his right under Krankel to have his claims considered and ruled upon. Additionally, while the circuit court may rely on its memory of trial counsel's performance, the purpose of Krankel, as discussed earlier, is to create a record on appeal sufficient to litigate those claims. There's nothing in the record to suggest that the circuit court ever considered Mr. Reed's claims. Counsel never argued those claims to the court, and the court never issued any ruling, either orally or in writing, explaining why it was denying them, let alone that it even considered them. Without any such argument or ruling, there's nothing in the record to suggest that Krankel was complied with. There is no harm in simply holding the circuit court to the bare minimum of the Krankel procedure, which necessarily requires at least a token reference to the claims and an explanation as to the circuit court's view of their validity. Furthermore, while that third method of approach, the circuit court relying on its memory of counsel's performance at trial, is indeed a valid way to inquire into the pro se claims, it ignores the fact that the first two methods of analysis are the far more often used approaches when inquiring into Krankel claims. And those two approaches are, first, the circuit court can ask questions of the defendant about his claims to add more detail, to provide more context, to explain why he believes that they should move on for further consideration, or indeed to ask if there are any other claims that haven't been mentioned previously. And the circuit court can also ask questions of counsel who the claims are raised against. Now, there's no requirement that these first two modes of analysis be used. Again, it is the most often employed method of analysis, and that is simply because it speaks directly to the purpose of a preliminary Krankel inquiry, to create this record sufficient to not only litigate those claims when they are first brought to the trial court, but also to create a record on appeal so that the defendant may challenge the ruling of the circuit court that the claims did not have merit, or in an evidentiary hearing that the claims did not rise to the level of an effective assistance of counsel. In essence, the state asks this court to rule otherwise, to suggest that Krankel is satisfied when a defendant raises pro se post-trial claims and they are never discussed again on the record. This argument is directly contrary to the Supreme Court precedent interpreting both the procedure and purpose of Krankel. In this case, it is Mr. Reed's argument, and the record demonstrates that neither the purpose nor the procedure of Krankel were complied with. As the state notes in its response brief, Mr. Reed was not shy about letting the court know his dissatisfaction with his initial counsel. That's what we expect of defendants in these cases if they wish to raise Krankel claims. We would like them to be voluminous if they have voluminous claims. The fact that he raised so many of them doesn't abrogate the circuit court's need to conduct any sort of inquiry. Again, at the risk of beating a dead horse here, there's simply nothing in the record to suggest that the circuit court ever considered them, let alone that it disposed of them in a way compliant with either the purpose or procedure of Krankel. Because there's nothing in the record to support the state's claims otherwise, Mr. Reed would respectfully request that this court remand his case back to the circuit court for a preliminary Krankel inquiry. And with my remaining time, if Your Honor have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Questions, Justice Welch?
No questions.
Justice Cates?
No questions.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Campbell, response?
Thank you, Your Honor. I have two procedural components that I'm going to address today, but first I want to briefly address something the defendant said in his reply brief at page 8. He claims that the state implicitly implies that there was no preliminary Krankel. That is not correct in any way. I would also note that in his reply brief, the defendant did not contest or address the merits of the state's harmless error argument. And that if there were a failure for the preliminary Krankel inquiry, you can make a harmless error argument on claims either addressed by the trial court or rebutted by the record. That's in Palomera at 63 to 64. For the procedural issues, first, the record demonstrates that Reeve was sufficiently informed and performed his duties. At the trial court order on May the 15th of 2019, which is at C-169, the court acknowledges the pro se correspondence by the defendant and says it will treat it as a motion to withdraw his guilty plea. There's no transcript for that day, so we don't know if anything else happened or what that might have been. So the trial court order on the 15th is only 10 days after the defendant's sentencing hearing. The trial court order on May the 22nd of 2019 at C-172, again, there's no transcript for anything occurring that day. The court says Attorney Steele was quote unquote removed and appoints a new PD. The use of the word removed is significant because I think that indicates that it was in fact in response to the ineffective assistance counsel claims in the pro se correspondence. Private counsel entered his appearance on December 19th of 2019 at C-243. Reeves, the first appearance by Reeves, and I apologize because I misstated the date and the record citation in my brief, but the correct date is February 19th of 2020. That's a supplemental record at 152 to 153. Reeves notes the defendant filed a pro se petition and the state's attorney points out pro se correspondence treated as the motion to withdraw the guilty plea. In the trial court's order that day, again, that is February 19th of 2020, it says, this matter comes on pro se motions filed by the defendant while in the Department of Corrections, and note the pro se motions in the plural.
Ms. Campbell, Mr. Seeloff cites to People versus Reed in paragraph 51 and Reed, they stated, allowing trial counsel to withdraw and appoint a new post-trial defense counsel does not satisfy Krankel procedure. How do you?
I would respond to that in part addressing that with references to People versus Ayers, which was a case that this court referred to in Ferguson. So briefly, the three methods, as counsel noted, are discussed with trial counsel. Number three, the trial counsel's knowledge of counsel's or trial court's knowledge of counsel's performance. And
but this was a plea agreement. This wasn't a trial where the judge could have observed right. The counsel conducting okay. His defense. This is a plea agreement. So how does trial counsel or how does the trial judge know what trial counsel's effectiveness was?
Okay. In large part, then let us go to the second element. And in Ayers, the court notes that the allegations of ineffective assistance can be raised both orally or in writing. That's at number 18. And then at number 11 in Ayers, it notes that it can be a letter or a note to the court. The purpose of a preliminary Krankel, according to Ayers, is to ascertain the underlying factual basis for ineffective assistance claim and to afford the defendant the opportunity to explain and support his claims. That's at 24. So in other words, you need specific factual allegations. And that is exactly what occurred in the very voluminous correspondence and writings by the defendant. I list those at my brief at page 16. There are at least 12 pro se filings. They are addressed to the trial court judge, to the chief judge, to Attorney Steele, to the chief defender. They give very specific allegations on exactly what Attorney Steele did, according to him, incorrectly or provided ineffective assistance of counsel, provides very specific factual allegations to support his claims. So in other words, the court is able to ascertain the underlying factual basis for the claims, and the defendant was afforded his opportunity to explain and support his claims. I can give one example. I do cover these in my harmless error argument in my brief, but one example is the post-trial motion. He says that Attorney Steele did not spend enough time with him. However, in his specific allegations, he said she spent 10 minutes with him. She gave him a pen and told him to write corrections on the PSI. The record contains the defendant's handwritten annotations on the PSI at 231 to 235. And then in the sentencing hearing at the second supplemental record at 19 and 21, Attorney Steele makes several corrections to the PSI at the sentencing hearing. So that is a claim that is clearly rebutted by the record, which is allowable under Palomera. The other claims were basically Susie Wall's victim impact statement and that the cross-examination of probation officer Wheat. Again, those are both specifically addressed with factual supporting details by the defendant in his pro se filings, and they are rebutted by the record. In People versus Rodas, the Supreme Court noted that these cases are taken on a case-by-case basis with fact-specific examination driven by the record. That's exactly what should occur in this case. Another purpose for a preliminary Krankel is to make a sufficient record to limit the issues on appeal and to make the record necessary so that the issues can be reviewed on appeal. That's at errors at 13 and 21 and more at 81. That clearly occurred here. Defendant has specified in particular three specific areas where he claims that his trial counsel, Ms. Steele, was ineffective. He gives specific factual support that is in the record, and then those claims are rebutted by the record itself. We also need to look at Attorney Reeves' 604D certificate, and that is at page 275. He filed that in conjunction with his amended pleadings. And in that certificate, Counsel Reeves says he consulted the defendant about his contentions of error in the entry of his plea and in the sentencing. Attorney Reeves examined the trial court file and the report of proceedings of both the guilty plea and the sentencing. And three, he made any amendments necessary for an adequate presentation of any defects in those proceedings. So here, as I noted, there are at least 12 pro se filings to the trial court judge, the chief judge, et cetera. There is no way that this privately retained attorney consulting with his client and reviewing the trial court filings and pleadings could be unaware of the defendant's allegations of ineffective assistance of counsel. It is presumed that the 604D certificate is accurate. And I think those are some of the major distinguishing notes for this case and other cases is that this is a motion to withdraw a guilty plea. So we have the newly appointed counsel who can do an independent evaluation of the original attorney's conduct, files out his certificate saying he consulted the defendant about potential errors, he reviewed the file, and he made any necessary amendments to the proceeding. I see my time is up.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Campbell. Questions, Justice Welch?
No questions.
Justice Cates?
No questions.
Rebuttal, Mr. Seeloff?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I'll start with the state's first point first, because I think it speaks to the rest of sort of the argument that they make throughout, not only in their brief, but in their time today, that Mr. Reed did not respond to the state's arguments that his ineffective assistance claims were meritless. Again, the point here is that no preliminary Krankel inquiry ever happened. And so if the state is willing to point to me to anywhere in the record that it can state the court has considered these claims and found that they don't rise to the level of a allegation sufficient to determine whether an effective assistance counsel happened in this case, I am open to being corrected on that. In my review of the record, that simply never happened. Counsel never raised, new counsel, either the first or the second of Mr. Reed's new counsels, never raised the ineffective assistance claims against the first counsel. The court never discussed it. There's nothing in the record to suggest that anyone ever mentioned ineffective assistance of counsel except Mr. Reed. And so to point again to Ayers and Moore and the purpose of Krankel without a preliminary inquiry, effectively to take the state's argument here, would be to say that a defendant may shout into the void and we'll just figure it out on appeal whether he was correct or not. The purpose of Krankel is when you raise these claims, you get an inquiry. And Mr. Reed doesn't contest that the court can rely on that third mode of analysis, that it can rely on its memory of counsel's performance. But as Justice Vaughn noted, this wasn't a trial. This was a guilty plea. And so there was very little performance for the circuit court to rely on its memory of. Also, to that point, counsel for the state today argues that effectively Mr. Reed wouldn't stop telling everybody how ineffective his counsel was. So they all knew what was happening. Great. That's even more information to bring up at a preliminary inquiry, which again, did not happen. Nobody ever asked him about these claims. Nobody ever argued his claims. To that point, counsel points out the 604D certificate that new counsel filed in this case. But as I mentioned earlier in my initial time today, and in arguing that motion to withdraw, he was on record that there were ineffective assistance, or he was put on notice, I should say, that there were ineffective assistance of counsel claims. And under Krankel, there has to be some sort of inquiry. And if we're going to allow this sort of molding of Krankel into a motion to withdraw hearing, then at the very least, he has to explain why he didn't raise those claims, if they didn't have merit, if Mr. Reed had told him before the motion to withdraw hearing that he no longer wished to raise them, whatever it was, or the court had to ask why nobody was bringing him up. But even if we are to allow that Krankel shifting into a motion to withdraw sort of context, it doesn't take away the fact that somebody's got to ask about these ineffective assistance claims and the court has to make a ruling. There simply is nothing in the record to support that either of those circumstances ever happened. And so counsel's focus on the merits of Mr. Reed's ineffective assistance claims entirely misses the point. That, as I mentioned in my initial time, there's no harm in holding the circuit court to the bare minimum. I'm not going to put an exact time frame on how long this inquiry could have taken. It could have taken seconds, could have taken minutes, it could have gone into hours if the court really felt like going through a big to-do. But at the bare minimum, something had to be said out loud or in writing and then put into the record. And that simply didn't happen here.
Mr. Seeloff, should this court take any import from the fact that the docket entry says initial counsel was removed as opposed to allowed to withdraw? Does that matter?
No, Your Honor. Perhaps if there had been some, again, literally any discussion of ineffective assistance of counsel in the record by someone other than Mr. Reed, perhaps that distinction would have a difference. But in this case, removed doesn't mean anything. And it goes to that point that the appointment of new counsel doesn't matter if there is no inquiry. The point is to create a record. Sure, Mr. Reed said a lot, but he is a layperson without legal experience. It's why he was given new counsel. It's why we have the legal system. We don't let people duke it out on their own and scream into the void. We have procedure. We have purpose. Neither was followed in this case, and that's why a remand would be appropriate.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Seeloff. Other questions, Justice Welch?
No questions.
Justice Cates?
No questions.
All right. We've considered your briefs. We will consider your arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement, issue a decision in due course.